Greetings and welcome to the Golf Betting System Podcast 120. We are discussing the Rocket Mortgage Classic on the PGA Tour. This podcast is for listeners of 18 and above. Please be gamble aware. I'm Steve Bamford, PGA Tour Preview at Golf Betting System. And with me, we have Golf Betting System's European Tour expert, Paul Williams. He's actually got a tournament to tip up on next week. And podcast pundit, Barry O'Hanrahan. Good morning, gentlemen.
Morning, guys.
Morning, guys.
How are you two surviving the post Dustin Johnson concrete block on the back of the head miss from last week?
Yeah, that one was kind of silly by us.
Painful, wasn't it?
I mean, he went so well at Heritage on a course that he shouldn't really go well on. Mm. And yeah, I mean, changed the putter and the stroke looked really good. Sunday's viewing was amazing, like, because guys kept going well and then blowing up, and then John, you know, he reached the par five, and it, you know, it's a gift of a birdie, and then he goes and pumps one out of bounds, and it made it very interesting all of a sudden. Mm. He was good though. He was really good, and I wouldn't be surprised if he wins again soon.
21 PGA Tour victories and one major.
Yeah,
that's all.
Yeah. He has been pretty prolific over the last 5 years or so, isn't he, in terms of wins? Yeah. But yeah, no, it was impressive. You know, we obviously, hindsight's always something to look at and get frustrated about. But we talked about him last week, didn't we? The stats coming out of Heritage were good. Clearly, he led the field for ball strike, led the field for total drive, led the field for all-round performance. He topped the predictor for the second week running. The predictor number one selection won the golf tournament, and we contrived to ignore him on both occasions, which is rather frustrating. Bryson DeChambeau this week, folks, tops the predictor.
Amazing, eh? Who'd have funked it?
Well, yeah, it's interesting because with both Webb and DJ, clearly around the 28-30-1 mark, neither of them were the bookies' favourites by any stretch of the imagination with those two tournaments. Yet they both topped the predictor model for those weeks, and they both came through and won the golf tournament. So well worth looking at. But yeah, frustrating, as you say, to miss out on him because the signs were there. But we live and learn. And as we all know in this game, you brush yourself down, and you don't have to wait long to have another go at another week, do you?
No, it's always there's always the next exam paper the following week. Visit Golf Betting System with betting previews containing tips, matches of tournament statistics and our predictor model, all available completely free of charge. Please subscribe to this podcast and drive the popularity of the show. We are available on social media. Barry's on Twitter at A Good Talk Golf. Paul is at Golf Betting and I am at Bamford Golf. You can join our Golf Betting System Facebook group. The link is available in the description box. Please look out for the Steve Bamford Golf YouTube channel where I present the Golf Betting Show each and every week. Right, please take time to rate and review us on Apple Podcast. That is the podcast currency and drives our listener numbers continually upwards. As ever, for those who leave a review, I will read them out at the start of next week's show. We have one here from Ireland, Barry. From Cormac McSporty via Apple Podcasts. He's a regular. I like Cormac. He sends out a lot of tweets. Title of the review is Exceptional Golf Pod. 5 stars. He has been listening for years. Steve and Paul are a cut above the rest of their contemporaries. He hasn't mentioned you, Barry. Paul's Che Reavie tip for the US Open at Pebble in 2019 was a personal favourite. 250-1. Thanks for the tips and entertaining podcast over the years, lads. That is from Cormac McSporty in the Republic of Ireland.
Thank you very much, Cormac. Was that the second person to talk about Ches Reavie? Didn't we that mentioned last week as well?
Potentially, yeah.
Clearly enough.
Oh, I think it was Matt Every last week.
That was Matt Every, yeah.
Because Matt Every, you tipped him first round leader. He backed him each way in the overall market. Right. He's saying he's a bit of a bad one.
Clearly, we need to pluck out more of these 200-1 winners and places, don't we?
Keep these fantastic reviews coming, please, listeners, because it's the actual the positive vibes and statistical positives that it sends to Apple Podcasts, i.e. iTunes, is amazing. And it just helps to drive the popularity of the podcast. Right. Last week, we've kind of... Do we need to say much more about last week, apart from the fact that Dustin Johnson was a breeze block over the back of the head? Played well, didn't he?
He did play well. I was on Bryson, so I watched him quite a lot last week. And, you know, with the few featured groups, you're getting an awful lot of coverage for these types of players. So it was really interesting to watch him pretty much every shot for the first 2 days. And for me, when he manages to tighten up those 60, 70, 80 yard pitches, the guy is going to be virtually unstoppable. His long game now is not just long, but he's hitting it so purely and so accurately. He's given himself countless opportunities. And it's only those short pitches. And he's going to leave himself many, many short pitches in, given the
distance
getting off the tee. But he's got to get that ball dancing around the pin, because at the moment, those 60, 70, 80-yard pitches, invariably, they're going to 15, 20 feet. You know, and you've got to be making some decent putts to really take those opportunities. But if you're knocking those to within 3, 4, 5 feet every time, and he's playing well, you know, his short game's good, his putting's good, his long game's exceptional. Get that little aspect sorted and he's going to be very, very, very strong for every tournament that he enters. He already is, but even more so.
Clearly, he's 30 or 40 yards further down the fairway than he's ever been before. So he's having to hit shots into the greens now that are shots that he's not used to. And he said that in an interview last week, didn't he?
Yep.
He's basically having to re-educate his approach game now. And hit different shots and different distances that he's not used to.
No, absolutely. And, you know, if he's not spent his formative years practising these, you know, the gap wedges into greens, then he's not going to be as good as he potentially could be. But he'll work that out, I'm sure. And he's going to be a serious player in these three majors this year, I think.
It's terrifying how dangerous he is and will be, because he's proven time and time again, every time, you know, when faced with a challenge, he figures out a way to get overcome that challenge and become a better player. So, you know, as soon as he gets that, those kind of pitch shots sorted. I mean, he hasn't even fully clicked. You can see he's not fully hit his straps yet.
No.
And he's still threatening every week.
Every single week.
Yeah.
You can't argue with the fact that he's a 13-2 favourite this morning, can you?
No,
in the UK.
No.
Because, you know, he's the class of the field, clearly.
No,
him and Simpson are in their own little kind of island, aren't they, at the top of the betting. For the right reason, yeah. And it is a very, 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 very poor field in terms of depth and quality.
Simpson, again, statistically, you struggle to shake him off any week, really. But this week, again, is very, very strong. But, yeah, I wouldn't put anyone off covering off Bryson as a win only, just to be there should he get those final aspects clicking. And as you say, the field this week is significantly weaker than it has been over the first 3 weeks of this restart, so it's an interesting one. And again, top of the predictor model, is it going to be 3 weeks out of three for the predictor? We shall see. There's a few eye catchers last week. Zach Johnson, we've talked about a number of times in the pod, haven't we? And he's getting better, isn't he?
Yeah.
Much better all-round performance, I thought, last
positive
week.
Positive signs from Zach, yeah. Yeah, you're seeing him a lot more towards the top of leaderboards, aren't we?
Yeah, indeed. Will Gordon impressed last week.
Yeah. What did you think of Will Gordon, Baron?
Yeah, what a player. I mean, and it was so easy for him to kind of fall away and dwindle on the Sunday after that kind of funky round on Saturday. You know, it just wasn't really on it, but managed to get into the clubhouse. And like Sunday's performance was just brilliant. You know, just put the head down and got going.
Yeah.
And got a special temporary membership, which is, as we all know, really, really hard to get. You know, seven tournament window to get the points that would you'd need in a year to get your tour card.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Brilliant for the lad, isn't it? Very, very good.
how Spieth got his card back in 2013.
Mm. Yeah, decent prospect there. Brendan Todd as well. Again, you know, we saw him at the back end of last year, didn't we? Win those two back-to-back tournaments. And I put him up, which one did I put up? A couple of weeks back. It was probably the first week back, wasn't it? Missed the previous start as well. And then he couldn't miss a fairway, could he? For the first 3 days, he was absolutely metronomic and kind of wheels fell off a little bit on, well, quite dramatically on Sunday. But
there was a comment on our Facebook group last night or this morning about, Brendan Todd, I can't, you know, the usual, oh, what a choker. But you think about it, you know, he's being chased by and down by Dustin Johnson, who was world number one a few months ago. It takes a special kind of player to say, oh, yeah, Dustin Johnson's closing me down. It's not going to affect my game. I expect if that was Ted Potter Jr. chasing him down, he'd probably have been fine. It's all head games, isn't it?
I don't know. It's quite prolific, yeah. Ted Potter Jr.
You think of Brendan? You think of? Or I'll say Jason Kokrak then. Let's use Jason Kokrak as a. But you think of Todd back in the autumn when he won those two events in Bermuda and Mexico? Mm. Yeah, he was playing players that were kind of on his peer level.
Yep.
Yeah, mentally, I'd assume. But then you've got a big, you know, you've got the big dog like Dustin Johnson chasing you down, or a Rory. It's hard not to become affected by that, isn't it?
Yeah. Another good opportunity for Rory that he passed up as well, wasn't it? Would he open 63, I think it was, this week?
Yeah, but as Barry said, we know the master plan with Rory, don't we?
Well, we think we do. I mean, it looks, for all intents and purposes, like we hit the nail on the head. But, I mean, his first round last week, he was negative strokes game putting with a 63, you know. So, look, I think based on his comments as well, by saying like he made a few mental errors, it's just all part of the sharpening process to get everything in line for a few weeks' time.
Yep. Yep. If that works and he snares himself a major or two, then that's all justified, isn't it?
Well, this is it. And don't forget, you know, Justin Thomas was a well-backed second or third favourite last week, and he shot three over, missed the cut.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Golf's never that simple, is it?
No.
And you know, for listeners out there who haven't, you know, they've only, you know, you've only got into your golf betting since the sport closure, and you know, you're learning about golf betting, you know, just because you're backing a Justin Thomas at 12 or 14 to 1 doesn't mean that Justin Thomas is going to walk it. Golf doesn't tend to work like that, apart from when Tiger Woods was in his pomp at 3 to 1 every week.
Yep.
Phil Mickelson showed some form as well, didn't he over the first 2 days?
Yeah, he's not quite ready for the seniors yet, is he? Having turned 50.
I thought so. The thing that I'll take from last week was Victor Hovland and his putting. It was phenomenal. For a man to finish number one for strokes gained tee to green of the whole field and not finish in the each way places was an eye-opening performance, I thought.
Yeah, he did pass up rather a large number of chances, didn't he?
Oh, dear, oh dear. Victor Hovland to 6.5 feet. You think, oh, knock that one in. And then it comes up. Victor Hovland, putt, 8'5". Yeah,
at least he's getting it to the hole, Steve. You've got to take a little bit of a positive.
Reminds me of the days I used to back John Senden, who used to bang it into 6 feet virtually every hole and miss virtually every putt. And you're just watching the play-by-play screaming at the laptop.
It did. It has to be said, let's talk about the Rocket Mortgage now. Some of the prices I've seen this week have made me chuckle, it has to be said. Mm. There's some absolute shockers out there. Doc Redman at 40 to 1. It's like, my lord. Doc Redman.
The well-backed Doc Redman.
40 to 1. Yeah. That's just incredible, I think. That's got to be up there with the worst price of 2020. And I'm not really one to talk about value, but that is an absolute shocker. Could you see someone like Brendan Todd actually forgetting about last Sunday and just starting to play like he did on the Friday and the Saturday last week? Or do you think that'll actually hit him and that'll affect him for a short space of time?
difficult, wasn't it? Because we saw when he found his top gear at the back end of last year, he did maintain it for a few weeks. Because he won two, didn't he? And then he was right in the mix for the third one as well. Was it the RSM, I think?
Yeah.
And he ended up finishing fourth or something like that. But so it could have
been how many times do you see a player of Brendan Todd's abilities win three PGA Tour titles in a season?
Yeah, or do you reevaluate what Brendan Todd's abilities are on the back of having seen him do that? You know, should he be in a mentally as an observer of golf? Should he be in a higher category bracket in your mind than you think he is?
Right. This week's stop off is the Detroit Golf Club. It's 10 miles northwest of central Detroit. An historic club established in 1899. We're dealing with a hybrid of two courses this week, namely the North Course, 17 holes, and the South Course, which is the third hole. It's a Donald Ross original. And I can remember this coming on the schedule last year. It's a beautiful golf course, classical, tree-lined. It is a genuine Ross design. It hasn't been tricked up. It's had some work to extend it and whatever, but you look at the golf course, it's a beauty. It really is a lovely old design, 1916 design. But the fact of the matter is, and you know, we need to get down to the real detail. It's a 7,340 yard par 72, which in modern day parlance basically means it's going to get attacked and becomes a real birdie fest because, yes, it's an old golf course. It's got pretty large greens and also extremely wide fairways. We're talking 34 yards wide at 325 yards off the tee. So I thought Bryson is licking his chops this week. This is the kind of, well, saying that, I mean it. He can hit fairways when they're 29 or 26 yards wide, but when he's seen 34 yards wide, that must be, it's, you know, it's a go sign, isn't it?
Yeah.
Just to put that in some kind of context, you're looking at someone like Sawgrass, that's 30-yard wide fairways, and they're fairly generous, bearing in mind that's a 7,200-yard par 72 as well. So, wide fairways. The other thing is, and this was the same last year, there was quite a chunk of rain here Friday, Saturday, over the weekend. But this week is going to be 33, 34 degrees every day. No real threat of rain. And you just know that those fairways are going to get some nice roll on them. And they're just going to be watering those greens each and every night to make them nice and receptive and stop them burning up.
The dartboard tour continues for another week.
I think this is going to be extreme scoring. I think we're looking at another RBC Heritage, 22 maybe. I mean, Lashley won this at 25 under par last year.
Yeah.
I just wish one of these courses would like take the bull by the horns and differentiate itself a little bit from the other ones and just say, well, look, it's going to be firm and fast this week, guys. Enjoy.
There was that kind of hope with this last year. You know, you got beautiful Donald Ross design. You know, this is a guy that's designed some of the most iconic golf courses on the planet, like Eastlake, and you know, plenty of major championship venues. And, you know, there was talk that there was going to be some pretty tough rough here, and the greens, they have got some severe contours on them. You're thinking, okay, this could be a really good, you know, 12, 10, 12 under par kind of winning total. But I think with the PGA Tour, it's like, well, we don't want to scare the players off from a new tour stop. And next thing you know, they're shooting 25 under.
And that's what happened to Trinity Forest.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They made it too easy, and all the guys were like, "This is crap." Blah blah blah, and now it's gone. You know, so like you take away the what the course actually is, and try dress it up as something else, and it's not going to play like the course. You know, like it was designed, and it's just from a viewing perspective, it makes it, you know, from my, you know, personally, it makes it more entertaining when you see guys having to like work the ball in off these contours on firm and bouncy greens, and play the course kind of as it was intended, instead of this like just throwing darts at the greens. It's just a shame. I think, you know, because you're just watching the same tournament week after week, or at least it kind of feels like that.
I think you've hit the nail on the head. Dartboard golf this week, mate. Donald Ross Designs, Pinehurst number 2. That's his most famous 2014 US Open. East Court, the East Course at Oak Hill. That was the 2013 PGA Championship, won by Jason Duffner. I think Duffner's got a chance this week. Sedgefield Country Club is a regular stop-off on the PGA Tour. That's where they play the Wyndham Championships. I think Branch Snedeker. Plainfield hosted the 2011 and 2015 Barclays, which were in the FedEx Cup playoffs. Aronimink, we've seen that recently. 2010, 2011 AT&T Nationals, also the 2018 BMW Championship, which I think was won by Keegan Bradley. Keegan Bradley won that one. And probably the most famous of all the PGA Tour regulars top-offs, of course, the Tour Championship venue at East Lake Golf Club. That is another Donald Ross design. Greens this week, we are looking at... I know this for a fact, so I actually emailed the course superintendent last year, and he came back to me and he said 80% Poana, 20% bent grass.
Yep.
That's the mix of greens this week. From last year, what did we see? Well, we saw Nate Lashley shoot 25 under. But it was interesting if you just look at the statistics from last year. Taking the par splits, I'm reading this verbatim off of my preview. Taking the par splits, the par fives put up a definite fight as they ranked 21st hardest on the PGA Tour in 2019. However, the par threes, they were the 7th easiest. And the par fours, the 12th easiest, were essentially there for the taking. So, players that can play par threes and par fours well might have an advantage. And when you looked at Nate Lashley, he actually... he was a late alternate into this. He flew up there on the Wednesday. I don't think the bookmakers had even priced him up before the off. He certainly wasn't in the first round leader market. He was the first round leader. But if you actually looked at his numbers... He was in the top 20 on the tour, bearing in mind he was a rookie, for bogey avoidance. And he was also in the top 60 for par 4 birdie or better. So there were some signs there. He was also a very, very good wedge player. If you actually look at his wedge numbers, from 75 to 150 yards, he was an exceptional wedge player. But hadn't really done a lot on the PGA Tour. So I think he'd had a top 10 at Puerto Rico. And the outing before, he'd finished in the top 26, I think, at the US Open, Pebble Beach. So clearly, buoyed by that, he arrived here and was just peppering the flags and holing plenty of putts.
And it's really interesting.
He won by six shots.
Oh, he walked it, didn't he? Had he been in the field on Monday, it would be interesting to see how many people would have stumbled across him statistically because... As you say, there were a few pointers there to give you an idea that he was playing better than his price would suggest. Because he was 250 to 1, I think, was one of the quotes that we managed to pluck out. Because as you say, virtually none of the bookies had him priced up.
He caught the plane from Jacksonville, Florida at about 4 p.m. on the Wednesday and arrived in Detroit, you know, getting on for, you know, 10, 11 o'clock at night. On the Wednesday night, and then teed it up on the Thursday.
Shot 63. One of those stories.
Never looked back, and he's now got a 2-year PGA Tour exemption. Throwing that at you, Paul, you're absolutely spot on. He was 7th for greens in regulation, and he was 6th for strokes gained approach the outing before at the US Open. He was also 14th tee to green. Yep. Good numbers. He's the kind of player you'd have looked at a price and said, you know what? I've got nothing really to back this up with, but he's one that could go well again this week.
Given the relative quality of the field at the US Open versus the Rocket Mortgage last year, it would have been quite a straightforward conclusion, I think. It's a shame he wasn't in the field to begin with, but you can't wind the clock back and look at that, unfortunately.
If we look at how you actually won this tournament last year, I know it's one tournament. I know you can't say it's a real template, but we'll look at it anyway, just for some background information. In terms of the traditional numbers that we look at in terms of what players have done to win this actual tournament, I'm trying to find it on the preview. I'm having a bit of a moment. You have to bear with me, guys. He was very, very strong on greens in regulation. and he was particularly strong in terms of his strokes gained approach when he actually won this. That won't surprise you at a tournament like this. I'll just read the numbers out to you. He was fourth. These are going to blow your mind. He was 11th for fairways hit, fourth for greens in regulation. He was sixth for strokes gained approach, third for strokes gained tee to green. Just to throw it in there, he was also second for strokes gained putting.
How did he only win by that few?
That's just, you're just not going to beat that, are you?
Yeah, it tends to get the job done, doesn't it?
So, yeah, sixth for strokes gained approach, 13th for strokes gained around the green, third for strokes gained tee to green, and second for strokes gained putting. If you look at that in terms of traditional numbers, 1.58 putts per greens in regulation. So that's just taking the Michael. And he was fourth for GIR. And actually, if you looked at Lashley's profile, he wasn't a sort of wham-bam kind of guy. He was the sort that, you know, he would find fairways and greens quite metronomically. Doesn't suggest, as per a lot of this information you find, doesn't suggest that you're looking for players that right now have got red hot putters, and that works so many times. Maybe we're actually looking for more kind of ball strikers and players that are accurate on their approach shots right now.
I think you've got to give yourself a massive opportunities in this kind of event, haven't you? And then for that week, your putter's just got to be hot enough to convert some of those opportunities. But if you're chipping around trying to save par all the time, you aren't getting to a winning score of 22, 24, whatever the number will be under par.
So what you're saying is Victor Hovland's going to screw me over again this week at 22 to 1, yeah?
He's going to have to find some performance improvement with that flat stick, I think, to do that. It does happen,
yeah, 22. Right, I'll take you through the top 10 in the predictor model. Again, William Hill this week, outstanding on price. I pulled these prices together at literally 10 minutes ago, so about half past, it was about 10 o'clock, I think, UK time, in the morning Tuesday. They are offering 8 places each way this week at 50 odds. That is the equal best in the market, and they are dominating on price. The top 10 of the predictor model are best price right now with William Hill. If you haven't got a William Hill account, don't forget, via Golf Betting System website, you can actually open up an account with their sports book and get a boosted new customer offer, which is bet £10 or €10 in the Republic of Ireland and get and receive £40 or €40 of free bets. You need to sign up via your mobile phone. You also need to sign up using the promo code W40. So that's Whiskey40, and you will receive up to £40 or €40 of free bets with William Hill. Right, 10 is Kevin Na, 40 to 1. I won't keep saying William Hill 8 places, but they are all William Hill 8 places each way. 9 is Patrick Reed at 16 to 1. 8 is Bubba Watson at 50 to 1. 7 is Jason Day at 60 to 1. I think they should have a market. Will Jason Day actually make the tournament A, and will he be play 72 holes? 6 is Brant Snedeker at 50 to 1. 5 is Tyrrell Hatton at 16 to 1. 4 is Tony Finau at 33 to 1. 3 is Hideki Matsuyama at 18 to 1. 2 is Webb Simpson at 12 to 1. And, as Paul said, if we're going to go for 3 predictor model wins in a row, Bryson DeChambeau, 13 to 2 is the number one predictor pick with William Hill 8 places each way. I must say as well, key terms and conditions for that new customer deal are available, of course, at Golf Betting System. Just type Golf Betting System or Golf Betting Tips into your search bar and you will find the website. No real surprises there. I mean, at the end of the day, there's 10 class players there of a field that is pretty, pretty weak, in my opinion. Mm. I'll actually be interested to see the depth of field that we get next week at Muirfield Village, because that's the John Deere Classic replacement next week. It isn't the Memorial Tournament, which happens the week after. So it'll be interesting to see what kind of field we get at Muirfield Village for this work day open, whatever they're calling it.
Well, you'd imagine players that are going to be playing the week after will generally choose to play both events, given it's on the same premises, isn't it?
Some will, but it was quite a late entry. And you know how these elite players don't want to change their schedules or can't because of, you know, their agencies and their sports suppliers and whatever. I wouldn't be surprised to see Adam Scott come out of hibernation next week if he's going to play any golf at all, because he could use that work day as a warm-up for the Memorial the week after. But, yeah, it'll be interesting to see the strength of field for next week. Clearly, a lot of people will have had it down as the John Deere Classic, and most of the elite players wouldn't have been bothering to play that. So,
and they're they're playing both events on Muirfield Village, but they're just alternating the tee positions. Is that right?
That's what I read. So, yes, they're playing the same 18 holes, but clearly wear and tear and whatever, they'll be using different tee boxes.
Yeah. Just to vary it up a little bit.
Mm.
You should certainly get a good indicator for the following week from whatever happens next week in terms of how the course is playing generally, which will be good.
How are you two going to play this tournament on the basis of we've only seen one renewal and we know it's going to be some kind of birdie fest, which tend to be the most difficult events to call in terms of picking players? I mean, just for your background, for the listener's background, the prices of the places here last year were absolutely astronomical. I think Wes Roach finished second at 500-1. And that's bearing in mind that Lashley was 250-1. We also had Doc Redman at 350-1. So that was first and second and third. 250, 350 and 500-1. Wow.
Juicy.
Well, I mean, it's an easy jump for me to go for a higher price than that. So, you know, with that sort of trend in place, you know, I've put a very small bet on Seamus Power at an absurd number. I think it's 600-1, eight places.
Yeah.
But I also hedged that because he doesn't usually last the four rounds. So I hedged that bet. So I'm guaranteed money this week with this by backing first round leader as well.
He does like a fast start, pal.
Yeah.
So look, that's just one of the little fun bets for the week. It's beautiful as a punter to see that those prices actually have hit in a tournament. The problem is when you're looking down at the guys in that price range, you're seeing a mix of form or lack of form, so it makes it a little bit harder to go and pick one or two to actually add to bet.
Yeah, there's not. You look that far down, and you're having to take a certain leap of faith. I think generally, to answer your question, Steve, I've backed three players, and they're all three-figure prices this week. And it's not just the history from last year to consider there. The other factor for me is that we're seeing this continually developing COVID situation with the tour. We're seeing players pulling out, players testing positive during the run-up and also during the event itself, as we saw last week. And you could conceivably end up in a situation where any of your players, without any way you could possibly foresee it,
pull out.
Who end up pulling out, yeah. And, you know, if they're two, three rounds into a tournament, you know, unlucky, you're not getting any money back from the bookie. If they pull out pre-event, then you know, you're a non-runner and away you go. But it does add an extra dimension into your thought processes as well. And I know there's been some conversations and some thought processes around those players that pulled out last week. So if you're looking at Dylan Fratelli, who played last week but has subsequently tested positive for COVID, Fratelli played with JT Poston and Ian Poulter last week for days one and two. But then day three, Poulter played with Chappell and Spieth. And day four, Chappell played with Jason Day. So we were joking earlier about Jason Day not making it through to Sunday, potentially. And he's already had a voluntary test for COVID earlier, at the back end of last week, because clearly he needs to know how what his personal situation is. But, you know, there could be this domino knock-on effect from any of the players that have played with players who have come into contact with players who have subsequently tested positive. So there's a whole new dimension to try and work into your thought process.
As if it's not complicated enough.
Yeah.
I got it right with Harris English, because I tipped up Harris English yesterday on my preview, and within 2 hours I checked my phone and he'd withdrawn. He's COVID-19 positive, so that saved me 3 points.
Yeah, it's
mistake money.
it is another dimension to consider to your processes, and that's led me down a route of relatively small exposure this week, and all longer prices should one of them oblige. But I'm still sorely tempted just to have a saver on Bryson at the top end. I must say, just haven't quite pulled the trigger yet.
He's going to win one of these tournaments, isn't he? We are going to be going to the Cathedral of Ball Striking soon, Muirfield Village, as we discussed, and he's already a winner there. I would have thought that his total driving game and GIR game, numbers-wise, is going to be perfect for Muirfield Village. Whether he wins that tournament at, say, I don't know, because that's going to be absolutely minted, isn't it, the Memorial? It's going to be absolutely loaded. Yep. It's going to be like a major, everyone. That will be Tiger's first start of the year as well, you'd presume, if we're talking about, you know, COVID-19 and whatever. But you could see DeChambeau winning it. Cantlay played quite nicely as well.
Yeah, did you?
I set myself challenges, you know that. And I do it for the listeners' pleasure and for my own weird thinking. How can you link Nate Lashley, Wes Roach, Ted Potter Jr. and Brian Stewart? So I set myself that challenge over the weekend, yeah, rather than watching Victor Hovland miss another four-footer. I said, how can I link Lashley, Roach, Potter and Stewart, who were crazy money prices and who were all in the mix and got each way returns and the winner here last year? Do you know, I found a course that links them all together. I had to go to the Corn Ferry Tour. That probably doesn't surprise you. El Bosque. Does that mean anything to you two? The Mexico Championship, they play on the Corn Ferry Tour. They did play on the Corn Ferry Tour. They play it at the El Bosque Golf Club in Leon, Mexico. It's played at 5,900 feet above altitude in Mexico itself. And Nate Lashley finished eighth there in 2017. Wes Roach has finished first and second there. Ted Potter Jr. has finished third there. And Brian Stewart has finished sixth at this El Bosque Golf Club. Don't ask me what the link is, but it seems to be there. I've got a list here of players that have played well at El Bosque.
I know, I've just tapped it in. I'm just having a look to see if any of my players are...
I'll just read through the names.
Paul, stop cheating.
So what I'm doing here, I'm reading through some names, and if we get some obscure players all of a sudden finishing in the top five next week, I will take huge props on this. Roberto Castro, Chris Baker, Brian Stewart. These are all finishing the top 10 since 2011 at this golf course. Wes Roach, Tim Wilkinson, Chesson Hadley, Andrew Putnam, Adam Hadwin, Mark Hubbard, who is playing some very nice golf at the moment, Mark Hubbard, Cameron Percy, Patton Kizzire, Kevin Tway, Luke List, and Peter Malnati. Now, Malnati is interesting because Malnati was, I think, tied in the top three or four after 36 holes here last year, then completely fell away. But, you know, this is what I'm saying. It does link in to this golf course. Wesley Bryan, who's playing some nice stuff right now, won at El Bosque in 2016. Richie Warinski, Brandon Haggy, and CT Pan. Pan, of course, won the Wyndham Champ. He finished the... Did he win the Wyndham? No, he finished second at the Wyndham a couple of years ago behind Snedeker, didn't he? Pan's playing some nice stuff from tee to green. Sergio Munoz has finished second and third at this golf course. We've got Roger Sloan, Austin Cook, Seb Straka, Joseph Bramlett, who's he's busting a lot of models right now, Joseph Bramlett. And we've got, again, Mark Hubbard finished his sixth on another occasion. Martin Trainer, Chase Wright. There you go. Now, I've tipped up a couple of those players. I have tipped up Patton Kizzire at 150-1. And I have tipped up this morning, as a replacement for Harris English, I have tipped up the resort golf course master that is Adam Hadwin at 66-1 with William Hill. Any names on there that tickled your fancy or you're going with?
There wasn't any that you've read out that that I have backed, but
I'm not saying that one of those is going to win, no, or that no, if no. You haven't got a name on that list, you know, don't back them, but just an interesting link there.
It's interesting with Malnati, because he's one of the kind of go-to players for these low-scoring resort-style tests.
Such a good putter, isn't he?
He is, yeah. He can certainly string a lot of red numbers together. So interesting that there's a link there. Sebastian Munoz, as you said, he's been playing some nice stuff as well, hasn't he?
He has, yeah. Joseph also a Bramlett. Winner. He's a winner this season.
Yeah, yeah. Bramlett, as you say. Because he got a couple of top threes on the Corn Ferry prior to last week. Playing at the Travellers, didn't he?
So, I would assume that Bramlett is going to be, you know, in the 6K range. I would have thought he's going to be pretty. I mean, he's 100-1 Joseph Bramlett this week. Mm. That's how good his stats are. And we've been saying this for so many months now on this podcast. A lot of these prices that you see from the bookies now are so related to strokes gained numbers. Because Bramlett, he's been playing some good golf on the web.com, hasn't he? Oh, sorry, the Corn Ferry. And his strokes gain numbers are through the roof when you look at them. But he's never had a top 10 on the PGA Tour. But from a DraftKings perspective, people are going to be slotting that guy in, no doubt about it.
Yeah, and it will come with him, I think. He's one of these prospects that you've got to keep an eye on, I think.
I'll talk you through Patton Kizzire quickly. Kizzire's always one that interests me. He shows very, very little, and then he's one of these guys that on a 17, 18, 20 under par golf course just comes alive. And the fact that he was sixth last week, 600-1, did I see a bet slip at 600-1 for Patton Kizzire on our Facebook group? He's the kind of player that will string two good performances together. He was 18th for greens in reg, 9th for putting average, 7th for strokes gained on approach, and 12th for strokes gained tee to green last week. He was 5th for total birdies. He made 23 birdies at the Travellers last week. His two wins have come on the PGA Tour at 19 under and 17 under, where he won in Mexico at the OHL Classic. He also won the Sony Open at Wailea Country Club. I just think he's the sort, you just look at him, second in the Shriners Open, which is always a birdie fest. Birdie fest are just his meat and drink. Also, second at Silverado in 2016. That golf course in California, classical, short, 70 par 72. He finished second there in 2016. That, I think, is a very good comp course, Silverado. Branch Snedeker's finished runner-up there in the past.
Yeah.
And this year, Nate Lashley finished 17th there after he won this in the June. So I think Silverado's a decent comp course this week up there in what Napa Valley wine country. So Kizzire at 150-1 was my triple-digit selection this week. What about you two at these triple-digit prices? Do you want to take the listeners through your guys?
Yeah, you go first, Barry.
You've made a compelling case for Kizzire.
You like him,
dude. I might look at him for a first round leader, just continue that hot streak. Yeah.
He's one of those players that, and you know, there's quite a few like this. They will just come from nowhere, find some form, the next outing. If the golf course is right, I'm not saying, you know, that if he'd done well last week, he'd go to the US Open and finish sixth. But again, at another golf course that's going to be over, you know, 20 under par target, why isn't he going to play just as well as he did last week? I don't think there's any reason why he wouldn't. And he's nowhere in the FedEx Cup. You know, we're getting very, very deep now into the season. There aren't many tournaments left before we cut the 125. There's players playing for their PGA Tour cards. I could see Kizzire going very, very well again. Because this is his kind of golf. You know, 20 under par, thank you very much. Go on, Barry. I've stopped you in your tracks.
Yeah. Okay, no, like I said earlier, I actually have backed Seamus Power for a bit of fun. Kind of all over the place in terms of adding more than a few bets.
I thought you'd be on Peter Uline, your old friend.
He's actually shown a few signs.
No, absolutely, absolutely.
Of life.
Mm, he is.
Yeah. Is he at? See, there may be another first round leader. I don't know. What's he at there?
Okay,
Okay, yeah. Look, definitely one to consider. Yeah. If you put me back on him, though, it's going to be an affair that lasts for a long time and could potentially be very expensive.
I have no idea who Paul is tipping up this week. He hasn't said anything to me. But I tell you what, I'm just scrolling through the odds here. I'm just throwing players out there. You want a player that's a high-quality player and a player that on the European Tour shoots birdies that are going, you know, birdie fesser is business. Tom Lewis? I'm seeing him up at 200 to 1, Tom Lewis.
Yeah, potentially. That's not what I've backed, though.
Okay. I thought you might have had Tom Lewis. That's the kind of punt you'd have.
No, I've kept it relatively simple, actually. So I've backed three, and they're all 100 to 1 or more. The first two both showed some really tasty form last week. And as you said at the start, we've dropped down in four in terms of quality quite considerably since last week.
Massive.
Yet, the guy at the top of my list finished sixth last week and is still available at 200 to 1 here. And that's Ryan Armour. Now, generally with Ryan, he's one of those more accurate players.
Yeah.
What really got me, last week, he led the field for putting average. Now, Ryan Armour is not a putter by any stretch of the imagination. That was his best putting performance relative to the field since he won the Sands and Farms Championship back in 2017. And to see a sub 1.6 putting average from a player like Ryan Armour, who hits a massive fairways, when he plays well, his greens and his approach play is good. And you couple that up with a player who's suddenly finding some form with a flat stick. And there was a fair amount of Parano in the greens last week as well, don't forget. That, for me, is enough to get a little bit of interest. Now, I had a look through his performance here last year. He was 46th, but that was coming in off the back of a 54th place finish at the Travelers. Clearly, 6th last week was far, far improved from that. Yet he did open with a 64 here last year. He was he shot 64, 69 the first 2 days, so he's fourth going into the weekend.
Okay.
Before it all started to get a little bit too much for him. He was fourth going into Sunday at the Donald Ross Design Sedgefield a few weeks later as well. So again, there's a nice Ross link in there as well.
Yeah, I think he had a top five at Wyndham 1 year.
Yeah, quite possibly further back.
Yeah,
he has.
He's got one.
So, yeah, for me, for a player who showed enough form, and I say particularly with the putter last week, to finish in sixth spot.
Second strokes gained putting last week.
And that just isn't
behind Brandon's. How many times have you seen Brendan Steele top strokes gained putting? Well, he did last week at the Travelers.
He was another eye catcher, wasn't he, in terms of his stats? He was. So, yeah, I've gone for Ryan Armour at 200 to 1. I've also backed Scott Stallings at 100 to 1 with 7 places. You can get a little bit more on Stallings if you're willing to forego the 7 places, but I've backed him at 100 to 1. And he's another player, like Armour, who finished 6th last week, and I think he's just been a little bit overlooked here. Shot 64, 67 over the weekend, and that's one of the best performances that were out there over the course of the 2 days. It showed a little bit of promise at the Heritage before that, actually. His third round, 65, was pretty good, one of the better rounds of the day. What really caught the eye, though, he only made 5 bogeys in the entire week at the Heritage. Only made 3 bogeys last week at the Travellers, and that equaled the best performance on display for the entire week. We know with Stallings, when he gets hot, he can go low. He shot 24 under to win the, what was it, the True South Classic, wasn't it, back in 2012?
True South Classic, Annandale, Jack Nicklaus design. Mate, you're bringing it all home to me.
It's all coming back. And he's got 3 wins in total. I mean, one of those wins was at Torrey Pines. So again, in terms of the Poana link,
was the year that Gary Woodland blew up on the 17th. He won that, Scott Stallings.
He's a good player.
He's one of these other guys that he'll go missing for months, and then all of a sudden, bang, 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 he can string 2 and 3 together.
Absolutely. So he opened with a 66 here last year, faded after that, but he came in after missing 5 of his previous 6 cuts. So clearly that 6th place finish last week is far better in coming form. Plus he led the field for greens in regulation. Now with Stallings, again, when he starts finding those irons and starts hitting greens, then he's one that I tend to keep an eye on. So I was quite pleased to be able to get a 3-figure prize on him, given how well he did play last week. So that's two. The third one, a little bit more left field, Chris Kirk, who is...
One on the Corn Ferry.
He did, yeah. 110 to 1 you can get with the seven places, which is what I've taken on Kirk this week. And yeah, you said he won on the Corn Ferry on his last start, didn't he? And history's shown before with a number of players that those who come in with some hot form from a previous or a lower tour can hit the ground running. I don't think, you know, clearly this isn't the strongest of fields. And yes, it's a step up from that performance. It's, what was it, the Bear and, I forget what the name of the tournament was now that he won, the Bear and something or other. Baron King, was it? I'm not quite up there with my Corn Ferry.
You've got pubs reopening on the brain, haven't you? Was it the Bub and Gaunt, the Bear and Gauntlet or something?
It was the Dog and Duck Open, yeah. But he shot 26 under. It was the King and Bear Classic. I've got it on my notes here. The King and Bear Classic.
Where do they play that?
I don't know, Steve.
I knew you'd say that. I said to you the other day, where did they play that actual tournament? And never actually looked into it. Okay,
he shot 26 under to win that tournament.
Wow!
So if you want the player who's coming in having made a stack of birdie, I mean we've heard all about Chris Kirk. He obviously had that time out with he was struggling with the booze and a bit of depression, wasn't he? And he seems to have turned a corner on that now, which is really great news for him personally.
Don't forget, mate, ex-World Top 50, four-time PGA Tour winner, Chris Kirk.
Oh, yeah. One of those wins was the Viking Classic at 22 under, so he can clearly go low. He got no bogeys on his card for the entire week. He made one double, no bogeys, winning that Corn Ferry Tour win. And I read some of his comments afterwards, and... he talked about his good game. When he's good, he said he's definitely good enough to compete, even at the top end of the PGA Tour. So he clearly still thinks that he's a player. And as you say, ex-world top 50 player who's, you know, it'd be great to see him come back and you know, get back to where I think he rightly belongs. So he's a player who has played at the top level. In terms of Donald Ross form, he finished fourth at Eastlake back in 2014, so clearly made it all the way through to the Tour Championship that particular year. So, you know, there's a player there who, in past days, has been far superior to the bulk of this field. So, 110 to 1, I took seven places, a bit of Chris Kirk action this week. But that's the only three that I've backed, so I've not gone any further than that to try and eke out and get a profit this week.
I have a bet.
Go on.
Do you want to go in? Or
No, you go in, mate. I want you to go in.
This is most likely going to end in me banging my head against the wall saying, why did I do it? But something just led me towards Tony Finau this week. Yeah, so he's got that distance. Fairways are nice and wide. And do you know what? I'm actually shooting myself in the foot because I said to you guys yesterday, I said, I've got to stop backing guys and I need to have to hope that they have a hot putting week. But again, I find myself backing a guy who I need to have a hot putting week just to get above as usual. But there's a lot of what he's been doing recently has, you know, since the restart, that should put him in a position to be contending. You know, his short game's not really important or too important this week, but you know, tee to green, he's in your top 20 of the recent rankings, Steve.
Yep.
And then top 20 strokes gained total. So there's some scoring being done there by him, and he's making some. He's sixth in strokes gained off the tee. So he's going to be putting himself in position to have a go at things, whether he can dial in the irons over the last number of days since his missed cut this week is another thing, but less of a strength of field. So I don't know. You can hear the doubt in my voice, but the bet's been placed, so I can't take it back.
No. He was, in terms of his price and his position in the betting, he was an eye catcher because you normally expect
if you're using the value model like Jeff Feinberg does, who clearly is back five of the last six winners, and he has tipped up Tony Finau this week, you're in a fine spot, Baron. Because actually, that 33-1 spot, as Paul was saying, on Tony Finau, who has, you know, been in the last group at the Masters last year, he's a quality player, isn't he?
Yeah.
Now, who would you rather back? Would you rather back Tony Finau at 33-1 or Doc Redman at 40-1?
I knew that one was coming.
It's total and utter garbage price, isn't it, Redman?
Yeah.
Total and utter garbage. But yeah, I can see that. You know, at the end of the day, that guy is too good not to win golf tournaments, isn't he? And this could be the kind of tournament he just comes and takes. Maybe it'll be him and Ryan Armour in the final group on Sunday.
Yeah. Putting competition.
I was genuinely shocked. I mean, as you said, eight tournament trackers I keep. And I found a guy that was second in this field for greens in regulation. Yeah, so second in this whole field for greens in reg, right? I also found him. He's 10th in this field for strokes gained approach over the last eight tournament window. His numbers are just way out there. He's also in this field fourth for strokes gained total in the last 8 weeks. So if you think about it, strokes gained current form, he's fourth in this field and he's at 66-1. I just thought that's unbelievable. Adam Hadwin. I had to take that. Hadwin's playing some nice golf. A lot of shows. He's shooting 65s. You know, he's in the top 10 on one round at least every tournament he's been playing. And if you think about Adam Hadwin and you said, oh, you know, how would you categorise Adam? I'd say birdie fests, short golf courses where wedge play and putting are absolutely critical. He's also fourth over the last eight tournaments for strokes gained putting in this field. What is there not to like?
Yeah, impressive stuff.
I tell you, the other player at that price that I was interested in, didn't tip him up, is your friend Christian Bezuidenhout. And you say to me, yeah, 7 under, that's his game, 7 under, 8 under. Down in South Africa, was it this year, at the start of this year, he shot 25 under?
Yeah, he did, That has been a slightly different level, but I do prefer him on tougher assignments, personally. But
playing some nice stuff, though, isn't he, Bezuidenhout?
Yeah.
He must be fairly close, you know, to getting this special temporary membership, Barry, because he's been stringing some decent results together in America, hasn't he? But he hasn't had that breakout top five yet. I could see that this week, you know, potentially. Yeah.
I think that's what you need, isn't it?
So, Keziah and Hadwin, and then the two at the top for me, I've taken Kevin Na. I just think Na, again, he's a bit of a desert rat. He desert golf, low-scoring affairs. His wins are always at this 20-under kind of mark. Played very nicely last week, tee to green. I thought 40-1 was a decent price on Kevin Na, who, don't forget, has won three times in the last year. I think as well, if we're going off biorhythms, he's actually won the Greenbrier. I thought he'd won a tournament in this particular time slot, but I might be talking wrong. I think I've got that one wrong, actually. But anyway, he's playing some nice stuff, Kevin, now. And then at the very top, his price is CAC. But he's just playing. He reminds me very much. I was telling my wife about this last night. Not that she's interested in one iota. And I keep telling you two this all the time. He reminds me so much of Francesco Molinari in 2018. It's untrue. But you know, Tyrrell Hatton is just playing golf, best golf of his career at the moment. And 16-1, yeah, it's a crap price. But you know what? You actually just look at his numbers. You look at the quality of golf he's playing. He's up there right in this field. He's up there with DeChambeau. He's up there with Webb Simpson. Just the golf he's playing right now.
Yeah, he's in great nick, isn't he?
And I always take learnings from you, Paul, on the European Tour. And when you look at his wins on the European Tour and you look at the scores he shoots on the European Tour to win tournaments, it's pretty scary, really. He won the 2016 and 2017 Alfred Dunhill Links. Clearly, the host course for that is St Andrews. He won the 2017 Italian Open, which Paul kindly told me was played on a classical golf course in northern Italy with a tree-lined golf course with bent grass and Poana mixed greens. He also won last year's 2019 Turkish Airlines Open. But the winning scores, 23 under par, 24 under par, 21 under par, 20 under par. That's 88 under par to win those four European Tour events.
That's his game, isn't it?
And when he's won those European Tour events, he's won at 22-1, 18-1 and 18-1 the last three. So actually, him winning this at 16-1, yes, it's the PGA Tour. Yes, it's the best tour in the world, but this isn't the best PGA Tour tournament in the world. Let's be frank. It's pretty damn poor. So if he actually won this at 16-1, I would not be shocked in the slightest.
Fair enough.
So yeah, Hatton, Nah. I did put up Harris English, but clearly he's got other issues at the moment and has withdrawn. So I've replaced him with Adam Hadwin, and I've got Patton on Fire Keziah as my 150-1 shot. Anything else to add, gentlemen?
No, I don't think so. Looking forward to next week where we get a little bit of European Tour action.
Have you seen a field?
Yeah, it's one of these combined Challenge Tour European Tour affairs. So it's only small. I think it's only €1 million. It might even be €500,000 prize fund. But you've still got the likes of Thomas Peters playing, Joost Luitens playing. So I expect Peters, given what we saw before the break, will probably be favourite. Joost Luitens, Thomas Detry, Adrian Els, George Coetzee, all playing.
Decent.
Yeah, decent. Paul Dunn's playing as well. Remember, Paul Dunn lost his card at the back end last year. Had some problems with his with a wrist injury, as I recall. But it'd be interesting to see how Dunn comes back now, hopefully fighting fit and clearly keen to get his playing privileges back on the European Tour as well.
To recap, we've got two tournaments in Austria, but on different golf courses, yeah?
Yes, that's right.
And then we start this English golf swing. Is that right?
We do, yeah. So we've got, and that kicks off with the Betfred British Masters, which has been played up at Close House. And then, yeah, we go across a few other tracks. We play at Celtic Manor a couple of weeks on the trot there as well.
I said English, sorry.
Yeah, British,
I apologise. Yeah. I should have said British because obviously we're going to Wales as well.
Indeed.
Apologies for that.
But yes, so there'll be that stretch which takes us through to the back end of August. So yeah, as to what happens after that remains to be seen. I guess we'll have to play it by ear over the next couple of months with these events that are scheduled to see how they pan out. But yeah, hopeful that we're going to get some good action and great to get back to doing some previews and to talking about the European Tour, which has been away for far too long now.
Is the course next week the one that they've played European Tour golf on before? Is that the second event?
Yeah, no, this is they're playing at Diamond Country Club, which was where they played the Shot Clock Masters, which was the last one. Yeah. And prior to that was the Lyonnais Open, which was the old effectively the Austrian Open. But yes, and I've got a couple of winners there over the years. I'm sure I'll have to go back and check, but I've got a funny feeling it was Mikko Kohonen who won the Shot Clock Masters. Is that right?
Yeah.
And
high GIR was your formula.
Yeah. It's a course that very much suits someone like Joost Luitens, so I think he'll be a horribly short price next week. But time to start digging into the field and hopefully dig out a little bit of value in there.
So there you go, folks. We've got European Tour and PGA Tour action back. When was the last time? It must have been the start of March that we could say that. Yeah, was it the Qatar Masters or
Qatar Masters was the last one? Yeah, last one that was completed. So
we've got two tour action next week on the Golf Betting System podcast, gentlemen. Thank you for your time as ever.
Yeah, best luck, both.
We've actually done a fairly short podcast today, so that's good. Good luck to both of you.
Yeah, best of luck, chaps.
Best of luck, everyone.
Best of luck to listeners, and we'll be back again next week, of course, for two tour action on the Golf Betting System podcast. Thank you. Goodbye.